This is Andy Smith. You can see me at HeroesCon 09 in June. And I'd like to thank the Dollar Bin for spending a little bit of time with me.
Welcome to part one of the Christopher Nolan directed and edited edition of the Dollar Bin. We're telling this one out of sequence, just like Memento.
Well, no, we'll be telling it in proper order. We're not shooting it.
It's true. So I guess this is almost like a real movie where they do different scenes even that run together, even though they're not sequential.
Which I always thought that would be like that to me is like one of the hardest.
Oh yeah,
from a director or actor standpoint of being a real actor. I mean, if you're doing a crap movie, then who gives a shit? But if you're doing a real movie where there's progress from the character,
yeah,
it's like, all right, we're filming this last when you hate each other, and then 2 weeks from now you have to do like love scenes and you're in love with each other. Well, love scenes would never be hard. Or would they? It all goes back to that love scene.
So yeah, this is we're back at my abode, Greenville, South Carolina. We have completed our road trip of the Watchmen and interviewing and reviewing.
No stone unturned.
We are going to kick off the intro to our show where we do the what we read portion. And then later we're going to cut in and do the detailed discussion of the Watchmen and respond to listener voicemails and forum postings.
And even that has multiple parts.
Yeah.
Because part of it will be with J. Chris Campbell at his wife's office.
Yes.
Where we'll talk with him, who is someone that had never read, despite being a comic book enthusiast, had never read the book. So he's coming at it as a comic book fan, but someone who hasn't read the source material, which is odd.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're not going to see somebody who's ever read a comic probably that didn't know anything about Batman, but this, because this is so specific, I guess. Well, you know, Zack Snyder,
yeah,
his other movie 300, huge number of comic book fans had never picked that up,
yeah
beforehand.
I read it right very shortly before seeing that movie. Now Watchmen,
I think I flipped through it in Acme,
yeah,
and then but liked it so much, thought it was so cool that I went and bought a copy after the fact.
Yeah, Devin's currently pooping out of his mouth, so he couldn't make it today.
And why is that different? So we can say that. We can say something about Devin because he's not going to listen to the show.
But before we get into Watchmen, let's go ahead and, like I said, let's do our what we read. And since there's only two of us, we can
talk about 2,500 books. A couple weeks ago, like when DC was doing the Faces of Evil or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the one shots that I got and talked about was the Solomon Grundy one by Scott Collins. The first issue of the miniseries. It turns out it's going to be 7 issues. The art and the words are by Scott Collins. And I think he's a pretty good person to do that kind of artwork with.
Yeah.
And kind of what I said when I did the review of the one shot is that it looked to me like Phantom Stranger and the Alan Scott Green Lantern were trying to keep him out of the Blackest Night. That just was like what my opinion was. And that is absolutely what happened. Phantom Stranger basically says that he says that we're trying to not have you be dead for the Blackest Night, so he can't be a Black Lantern.
Interesting.
Which I think is cool. So, I mean, it's besides the fact I have interest in Solomon Grundy and that kind of stuff and miniseries in general at this point, it is also something that's tying into directly into Green Lantern. So interest there. That was a pretty solid issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of apparent that it's going to kind of go all over the place because you have a guest spot in this first issue from Etrigan the Demon. And next issue, you're going to have Bizarro. So I think it's going to kind of be a wacky, go all over the place kind of miniseries with a bunch of little guest spots. But it's fun. It's only 7 issues. It ties into Blackest Night. To a certain extent, I hope they don't succeed. Not necessarily because I want to see him be a Black Lantern, but if they cure him, then we never have Solomon Grundy again.
Right.
And I've always had some interest in that particular character.
It's an interesting concept, the whole idea.
So I'm going in hoping the good guys don't win, even though I don't care if he's to me, this isn't a character that does anything as a Black Lantern.
Yeah.
Because most of the time he's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, he's only been smart, like, in one story that I can think of, so I don't know how he'd use the ring. So I'm not interested in him being a Black Lantern, but I hope they don't succeed because I hope they're still going to be a Solomon Grundy. but I recommend that if anybody's looking for a miniseries to jump on, particularly anybody that I guess is hunkering for some Blackest Day type stuff already. I don't know that any Green Lantern besides Alan Scott is going to show up.
Yeah.
But
does he even count? I still don't understand what the Alan Scott thing is.
I don't think so, but I find it interesting that the Phantom Stranger knows what's going on. Couldn't he like holler at somebody, you know, wearing a green ring?
Yeah.
Hey, Hal, you might want to watch out for this. All these dead people coming back.
Recently, the Submariner miniseries just wrapped up. It was written by Peter Milligan and Asad Rybik. It's in the format. It's called The Depths. It's in the format of the, I don't know, whatever that Spider-Man storyline was.
Black Rain?
No. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
No, Chocolate Rain.
God.
What was that? I should remember that because all of us liked it but Flacco.
I didn't like it completely. I thought it was... Whatever it was. Man, for the love of God, why do I keep doing this today? I keep bringing up things and then you think about them. Anyway.
I don't remember what it was either.
That Rain in Hell Spider-Man or whatever it was. It's kind of told like, it's that. And then remember there was that Silver Surfer one?
Yeah, Silver Surfer Requiem.
Now, it's not this isn't a end of days of the character kind of thing like those were, but it has like the same kind of cover, like the Captain America Chosen kind of cover thing. Anyway, the art and everything has got that same kind of style. Basically, what it was about, these guys that go and search for Atlantis, and they end up like not coming back, basically.
Yeah.
And there's this doctor whose whole job as a doctor is he goes around and he disproves myths, like Sasquatch and Yeti and all those things.
So he's a myth buster.
Yeah, he's a myth buster. So he volunteers or gets asked to, or I can't remember the details of it, but basically he goes on this trip with these guys in the submarine to go save these or go find out what happened to these other guys. And he's down there to disprove the existence of Atlantis in the Submariner. It's basically just because it's earlier, it takes place in, you know, Cold War times.
Oh, okay.
And so, and you know, it's not this whole superhero outbreak thing, and nobody is positive that he exists or that Atlantis exists. And so it's basically, he's just saying, you know, it's just people seeing shadows and jumping, like, you know, the depths does crazy things to people. And so you go through this whole storyline and, you know, you kind of see like a silhouette. Maybe that's like Submariner. And this goes on for like 4 issues.
Yeah.
And it's not until the 4th or maybe even this issue, the 5th issue, where all of a sudden Submariner appears and he's like this protector of Atlantis and he's just like this murdering bastard of a guy. And I think I'd have been happier if they never even showed Submariner in it.
Yeah, like if they had the shadows or whatever, but you never actually got a real peek at him.
Yeah, exactly. Which I mean, the way they did it, it's cool. The way it wraps up where he does show up and everything, it's still kind of neat and it kind of leads to that, but... basically, the skeptic is the only one that survives. And the reason he survives, because he basically, he's just like, I didn't see anything. Because he know, I guess like somehow Submariner knew that if he's the one that survived, that he would never say anything because then it's his job to prove things don't exist.
Right. So if he comes back with something.
Evidence that he does, then it kind of like destroys his whole career.
It's kind of like, Bill O'Reilly telling the truth.
Yeah.
The whole thing goes down the toilet.
Right.
Vote Republican.
So it does work out and it's kind of a neat story, but I think I would have been happier if he never even showed up in it, which would have been cool to have a Submariner book, a character book without the character in it at all. Just the thought of the character.
I think that's a decent concept though, to have reactions to how people would react to a character and not have the actual character in it.
Yeah.
I disagree with you. I would like to see a Submariner book. I would just like for it to be good. Like Submariner and the Secret Eyebrow Society.
Right. What do you got, Ryan?
Back to kind of, you mentioned like in one-shots and miniseries.
Yeah.
I picked up something, a Spider-Man and the Human Torch one-shot.
Uh-huh.
My Espanol is not muy bien. But it's Spider-Man and the Human Torch in Baja de los Muertos. Perhaps.
Sounds right. Sounds good.
And it's basically Spidey and the Torch were gonna... The rest of the Fantastic Four is in the negative zone or something. And Johnny, for whatever reason, couldn't go. So he and Pete were gonna hang out at the Fantastic, hang out the Baxter Building, and use one of Reed's computers to play Rock Hero.
Is this a youngster targeted book?
It's set, and it doesn't actually even say all ages, but it is flavored that way. There's nothing improper about this book that you couldn't give to anybody. And the artwork is kind of like Saturday morning cartoonish.
Okay.
So I picked it up assuming that's kind of what it was.
Gotcha.
But it does not say like all ages or anything on it. And then they get called to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Which is a place apparently they had the Fantastic Four's number because they were there for something else. So Spidey and Torch head down there and try to solve the problem themselves, and you know, hijinks ensue. It's nothing super fantastic, but you know, this is another one, you know, it's a few more pages, but it was a $4 book, which I need to get better about looking at the prices now.
Yeah.
I have not been doing, but I kind of like the art style. Like I said, it's very Saturday morning cartoonish, and it's very, anybody could read this as well, which I like. I would have liked it to have been a dollar less.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was enjoyable enough that it was something that I recommend. But, you know, with a $4 price tag, you know, maybe I recommend, you know, you coming over to the house and you can borrow mine. More than trying to track it down for $4.
One of the books that I read, when I continue to read because it's awesome, is Supergirl Cosmic Adventures of the Eighth Grade, which is only $2.50. And it's $2.50 of awesomeness. I'm not going to go into it because it's awesome, and all you need to know is it's awesome. And I continue to enjoy that book.
Speaking of books,
I enjoy that book. As far as like Marvel Minis and all that stuff, that's Supergirl, because I've started reading those Marvel Minis. That's by far my favorite of the three.
You like it better than Mini Marvels?
I like it better than Mini Marvels.
There's another Mini Marvels trade out there that I have not been able to find in the store. I'm just going to end up buying it off of Amazon along with all the other useless stuff that I buy off of Amazon. Someone please take my credit card.
I have a $25 Amazon gift card if you're interested. If you want to work for it.
Why are you taking your pets off? Speaking of books that are $2.50.
Yes.
I normally don't see stuff from Aspen on the shelves a lot, but something is called Executive Assistant Iris.
Okay. Yeah.
Where basically this is an office chick, I guess, that's posing as her boss's secretary, and she's really like his assassin.
So it's not like Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
No. But it's $2.50, and flipping through some of the ads for other Aspen books. Yeah. Aspen has books that are being advertised as $1.99. And these are books that are just starting off, and books that are continuing that are like Fathom is getting ready to restart. I don't know who's doing it because they still just have, here we go. Al Garza's taken over the artwork and JT Kroll has taken over the writing on Fathom, but they're relaunching it not with a new number one. They're relaunching it as issue 7 or whatever.
Right.
But like that's $2.50. And there's some of the other things like Soulfire and things like that that's also for a reduced price and some of your other stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think this book had a lot of depth to it. It's not a series that I will continue picking up. But if I'm going to take a chance on something, there's a lot more likelihood that I'll take a chance, especially on an independent book with characters that you don't know, that I'll take a book, you know, take a peek at a pretty book that's $1.99 or $2.50 or something like that, than you know, something that's going to be $4. But yeah, I see most of the Aspen stuff as stuff that people will think, stuff that people will look at and say, wow, that's pretty. And I haven't seen anything that has any more depth to it than that.
Yeah.
If something does, you know, feel free to comment and let us know that you read something from that brand and like it and why you like it. Because like I said, I haven't seen a lot of that stuff on the shelves. But, you know, as long as stuff's like $1.99 and $2.50, again, if I'm going to take a chance on something, and it's, you know, $1.50 or more or less than some of these other books, you know, there's a good chance that'll get my money and not the $4 one.
Speaking of $4 ones.
$4.
Okay, that's quite a... You've done that like every show for the past month now, I think.
The Subway commercials come on a lot.
I don't have TV anymore. I wouldn't know.
You don't have TV anymore?
No.
Actually, yeah. They push the broadcasting back, but...
Yeah, but I don't have an antenna or anything. But that's beside the point. For $3.99 is, as many IDW books tend to be, Sir Apropos of Nothing, the Peter David story that I was loving, and I did a video review if you watch some of our video stuff on our website.
Which, if you don't, you're a bastard.
which is most of you, apparently. Sir, apropos of nothing, it's a Peter David story. Robin Riggs does the art in it. It just wrapped up. It was issue 5, which totally blows because I didn't know it was going to be that short of a miniseries. I really enjoyed reading it. I liked it a lot, and I'm very sad that it's over now. And it's a fun, it's just full of puns. It's just puntastic and awesome. Puntastic. And it makes fun of so many different pop culture references, you know, from different cartoons and different stories. And you know, the big focus of the beginning, in the very beginning, it's kind of a parody of Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Gunslinger. And it ends with as a parody of Dark Tower as well, which I enjoy.
But it goes off on other parody tangents in between.
Yeah. There's plenty of other, and the storyline itself is its own storyline. But man, it's just really funny. It's really, really smart. Well written. It's a fun story. And again, it's only 5 issues. It's IDW. It'll probably be in trade. I really wish it was more than 5 issues. You know, when we met Peter David that one time, we didn't interview him about anything. He was doing Dark Tower time. I think he was doing some Spider-Man stuff. Didn't really think of anything to interview him about. I love reading Peter David's critiques of things and his different blog entries.
Yeah.
I've never thought, man, I want to interview Peter David. I just like listening and reading what he already does. But man, I really want to interview him about this book. He's not listed to be at Heroes Con. It hasn't been announced, so I don't know if he will be or not. But I agree with you.
Like the first time we interacted with him, I mean, obviously we know who Peter David is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were just happy to do the panel or whatever, and he was a nice guy to us.
Yeah.
So that was all we had. But at this point, we've read other stuff that he's done and had so much to say on the show about it that we would actually have questions about.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of just like, so you're Peter David and stuff. I mean, that would have been our interview.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know at that time that anything would have immediately come to head.
Yeah.
You know, that like, you know, we read this and really liked it or really had a question about it. We would have been like, so you're Peter David. We understand.
It's like, so I hear you've written some Spider-Man stories. But yeah, with this Sir Apropos of Nothing, it feels like mine, you know, because Spider-Man, everybody fucking reads Spider-Man.
Right.
But like, I haven't heard anybody else reading Sir Apropos of Nothing, and I've reviewed it and said really good things about it. And, I would love to talk to him, just talk to him about that book. And like, man, where'd you come up with this? Or that's hilarious how you did this. I mean, there's so many things I'd love to ask him about that. I love that book.
Hopefully we'll get the opportunity.
Very sad that it's over.
Deadpool?
Yeah.
It's tying in with Thunderbolts now, as he's going after Norman Osborn. And it's a 4-part series where you'll have 2 issues of Deadpool, 2 issues of Thunderbolts. This would kind of tweak me off if I wasn't still buying Thunderbolts, but I'm still giving it a shot.
Are you still reading Thunderbolts?
Where he's going. Yeah, I mean, it's not great.
Yeah.
After the Deadpool thing, if I didn't really like the Deadpool issues, I still am enjoying Deadpool, and it's going to continue to get picked up. But if I don't like Thunderbolts more after the tie-in with this, that's probably inching closer to the chopping block.
Yeah,
because it hasn't sold me. I think all of the interesting characters from Thunderbolts have moved on to other books now, and I don't think they've replaced them with.
I thought the Thunderbolts were the Dark Avengers now.
They are, but he's made different people his Thunderbolts so he can use them Black Ops team.
What happened to Speedball? He's not on the Dark Avengers.
Right. I don't know what's happened to him. I don't know if they killed him or...
Penance, sorry.
If he's missing in action. Speedballs. The only other comic that I wanted to make particular mention of is I picked up the 30 Days of Night Juarez that was...
Crazy-ass clowns.
Written by... has vampire clowns to give you nightmares for weeks. Written by show favorite Matt Fraction.
The Fractionator.
And drawn by show favorite Ben Templesmith.
Red Hot Scribe Matt Fraction.
And both favorite in the Twitterverse.
Yes.
And what I told both of them via Twitter, which I'm sure they read, was that I thought it was the best 30 Days book that I've read since the first one.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really tie into any of that.
Yeah.
It's just finally a good story featuring the basis of, you know, vampires doing that voodoo that they do.
Being that I haven't read it, Templesmith did the art in the original 30 Days of Night a while ago. as earlier.
Yes.
In his arting. How's the art? Is it different?
No. He jumped right back into that style.
I mean, he's always had that kind of style.
Something I've really discovered with him, though, is he's a lot more multifunctional.
Yeah.
Multi-stylized. I mean, some of the stuff that he's drawn, it doesn't automatically remind you of other stuff. Like his President's Book.
Oh, God.
His President's Book in no way, shape, or form makes me think that's the guy that did 30 Days of Night. But, you know, I think that he's drawn so much of that 30 Day stuff, different series, different books, and things of that nature. I think he immediately got back into, here's what I want to do for this. Here's what I want to, how I want it to look. I don't think it looked any more different than the other 30 days of stuff I've seen him do. And he's done a couple of things besides the first one.
You just reminded me of another awesome thing that I recently read. It wasn't really necessarily awesome. And Ben Temple Smith, it was good. Ben Temple Smith did the art for a recent Doctor Who, The Whispering Gallery. And it was at, I believe it's a one shot that he did. I've got the special sketch cover.
Oh.
I also have he did all three covers. So I have two of the covers. I have the sketch cover and I have one of the other covers.
Reading the Doctor Who or did you buy them just to get signed to Heroes?
I was reading that Grant Morrison Doctor Who and I got this one too. So I'm reading him on occasion. And this was Ben Temple Smith. That's why I bought this one, really.
I don't know anything about Doctor Who. I wouldn't.
Yeah, this wouldn't mean shit to you then. It wouldn't mean a thing. Because this is actually takes place with Martha Jones is the companion with him, which is the second companion. Well, kind of the second / third companion from, I'll say second companion from the Doctor Who current series is when this one is. It's companion, whereas Grant Morrison's like
sidekick, significant other.
Yeah, sidekick, basically. He always has like a chick sidekick. And so it's Martha Jones is the chick sidekick on this. And it's just a one-shot story. It's Ben Temple Smith. He is able to sneak tentacles into it, which as Temple Smith does. It's definitely a classic.
Sneaky tentacles.
He's got, it's funny, his style, I don't know if it's an acquired taste or not. I think it's gotten more in depth than it was in the original, like the 30 Days of Night and even some of the Fell. I think it has more depth to it now than it used to. I do stand by my thing and saying that I think that this is going to be a huge year for Ben Temple Smith, 2009.
He's got a lot of stuff coming out, including the movie deal.
Yeah. So,
but I think that,
movie deal.
I think he's very versatile. That's the word I was looking for. He's much more versatile than I thought he was. And it's not necessarily that you wouldn't recognize, hey, that's Ben Temple Smith, but like his G.I. Joe cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's completely.
Yeah, that's very different than the 30 Days of Night stuff. I think Fell is along the same lines, but also very different.
Yeah.
And his President's Book is completely different and way far and above his other stuff that I've seen. I think he has more depth than just some of the Wormwood, 30 Days of Night type artwork than he has. And I do think that stuff like 30 Days of Night, Wormwood is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Those aren't books for everybody. Those, you know, not just what the story is, but the art. That's not stuff for everybody. But I think that he has the ability to do stuff for everybody.
Welcome to Hoxford got optioned as a movie.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. Another Ben Temple Smith book. Now, one of the things I was going to say is he does a lot of, everybody, you see him as a computer. Very, very computer-based artist.
Right.
But he can still draw his ass off. And, like, the sketch cover to the Doctor Who, I mean, does that look like Temple Smith did that to you?
No.
Yeah, it's completely different.
It's like some of the stuff in that President's Book.
Yeah, his sketching style is completely different than his computer style, but he can still draw his ass off, man.
He's got some mad versatilities.
He does.
And I didn't really think he was. I mean, before, I mean, I don't know if it's that he's been expanding and I've paid more attention. You know, I don't know if it's maybe both of those things, but, you know, as somebody who just thought of him as the guy that drew stuff like Fell in 30 Days of Night, he continuously surprises me when he does stuff that's not like that by how good he can be.
Yeah. I got to get a woodland creature by him.
With getting raped by tentacles?
No.
Well, maybe.
Okay. One of the things I asked to do last week was for everybody to call in and maybe leave a voicemail who was going to go see the movie and leave a prediction of how they thought the movie was going to be going into it. And then after they've seen it, call and tell us what they really thought.
Right. And some people were nice enough to do both.
Mm-hmm.
and some people were nice enough to do one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. Some people did one or the other.
We have some previews and not a how you felt. Yeah. And then we have a how you felt but no preview.
And then apparently Ted called and left three messages, and I don't have any of them.
Ted has called multiple times and we have none of them.
I don't know what's going on with Ted's there, but what can you do? But yeah, so what we're going to do now, before we really get into discussion, is go ahead and play some of the predictions. So then, and then we'll do our little discussion thing, and at the end here, we'll go ahead and play what they thought.
As a lead into that,
yes.
Since I called in and recorded a preview, even though I was going to obviously be here for this.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
Yes.
So tell everybody what you thought going in as a preview to what everybody else thought.
And I really, yeah, that's great. And I wanted to do that. I'm glad you reminded me. I really meant to call and leave one. But basically, here's what I thought I was going to feel about the movie before I saw it. Basically, everybody I talked to and would ask me, the idea that I had was I kind of had low to medium expectations. I didn't think I was going to utterly hate it. I thought I was going to get a very in-depth movie or book turned into a very just action-based superhero movie. I had something really good too, and I can't remember what it was. I might stick that in if I can remember what my analogy. Now, like, one of the things is I've never read, like, you know, we were talking about some of Alan Moore's other works. I've never read V for Vendetta, and I really like the movie.
V for Vendetta is a very acquired taste as a book.
Yeah.
I really like it, but like the monologues in Watchmen?
Yes.
Of characters?
Yes.
V for Vendetta is monologues on top of monologues on top of monologues.
Yeah.
It's a lot of reading for a comic book is how I described it to somebody that wanted to borrow it after having like really, really liked the movie.
Uh-huh.
And it is one of the most wordy, reading heavy comic books that I have.
It took me 2 months to read The Watchmen. I checked it out from the library. When I first started reading it, I skipped the prose sections and decided it was probably a bad idea to do that, and I went back and read them. At the time, I thought it was just part of the absolute version, so that it was just stuff added in. Realized it wasn't later on, and went back and read it. So going into this movie, I have never seen Watchmen as the most amazing comic book commentary on superheroes that I've ever read. So although I am not expecting or expected a lot from this movie, and rather being superficial in the 2 hours and 40 minutes that it can be, I don't think I'm gonna hate it, or didn't think, however that is. But yeah, that's my opinion. Now we're gonna go into Brian and the rest of the guys.
Hey, this is Andy Jewett. Here's my prediction for the Watchmen movie. I predict that I'm going to have a great time because I'm going to be able to get out of the house. So, yeah, that's about all I'm willing to put forth at the moment. I think I'm going to enjoy it, but I'm a little nervous, so I guess we'll see. Talk to you guys later. Still love the show. Bye.
Hey, guys. It's Terry in Kansas City. My expectations for the Watchmen movie are... Well, they're pretty high. I just got through watching the G4 special about the movie, and they interviewed Dave Gibbons, and yeah, I was still sort of on the fence until Blair Butler, you know, gave her, you know, seal of approval, and so now I'm in. All right, I'm going to be watching the movie Thursday, midnight, IMAX, and I will let you guys know what I think as soon as I'm out. All right. Later, guys.
Hey, this is Brian. I'm in the car on my way to see Watchmen. And, you know, we're supposed to give kind of our thoughts going into it, what we're expecting, that sort of thing. And at the moment, I don't really have any idea. You know, it seems going in that, except for maybe Adam and Rochelle, the comic book people that I've either heard or seen reviews from aren't liking it for one reason or another. And I've tried to stay away from things really spoiler heavy. I mean, not that I haven't read the book 12 times or whatever, but, you know, in context of how things are going to lay out. I've read the industry stuff where, you know, some movie people really don't like it, some movie people do like it. And I've also heard, you know, like from Adam, you know, some of the people that he went to go see it with who were comic book people leaving the theater really not liking it. So, you know, from a review standpoint, I'm not really sure what to expect. From my personal standpoint, you know, the first trailer that I saw, you know, when it first came out and when the first trailer hit the theaters, I was blown away. I thought, man, that looks awesome. And the more trailers I've seen, the more video pieces I've seen of it since then, you know, with the more reveals they're showing of actual acting, of, you know, actual scenes and things of that nature, and not, you know, cool clips put to music, I've been expecting less and less and expecting to like it less and less as I've seen more of those clips. So I guess more than anything, I'm going in thinking that it's overhyped, that Snyder in particular is being overhyped, and I guess I'm going to go in expecting not necessarily to like it. So, I mean, we'll see. I know it's almost 3 hours long. That's a long movie. It's a long time to sit in the theater. You know, that might be part of the situation for some people. I have read Watchmen relatively recently, so it's fresh to a certain extent. I don't know. I'm hoping to like it. I'm hoping that it does well. I'm hoping that it's good. But I think overall I'm going in expecting to be disappointed. So we'll see. And you'll hear what I actually think afterwards on the show.
What's up? This is Terrence. Just calling in. Leave my little statement about Watchmen. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite books ever. So hopefully that will translate to one of my favorite movies ever. I understand that they're going to be able to, you know, they're going to have to change a couple of things. And, you know, as a fan, I'm okay with that. I'm not one of those fucking rabid losers that do this shit all the time and call in and, well, or would call in and bitch about them changing the slightest thing. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how, mostly I'm looking forward to seeing how Night Owl translates onto the big screen. He's probably one of my favorite characters in the book. You know, I just want this guy to do him justice, really, is what it boils down to. So, fingers crossed. I know there are going to be tons of people ripping it and tons of people loving it. So, let's find out which camp I fall into. I'll give a shout a little bit later on and let you guys know how it turns out. Laters.
Hey, this is Adam of the Dollar Bin.
Dollar Bin.
We are here with J. Chris Campbell, Brian Ison.
All the testosterone that runs through you after seeing The Watchmen, you know. All that.
I saw it last Wednesday, and I'm still full of testosterone.
All that
art. But you watched 318 times in between now and then.
I was wondering why he was all greased up with a painted old four-pack.
Nothing gets Adam amped up more than naked, sweaty, eight-packed men.
Which there was a lot. Well, there was one in Watchmen walking around the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was disappointed with the lack of blue dong. I was expecting it to be really obvious.
This is how we're starting it. How you're jumping in right there.
A better way to start anything than with blue dong. Now I was expecting
you
it like
there
to
was
be
more.
I thought it was going to be real obvious. I thought he's going to throw it in your face.
You thought it'd be like boom, psh, boom, booch, like
well,
flapping
it's like,
there.
It's like
I'm large. I can make myself large everywhere.
It's bigger than it is in the book.
Yeah, it's not circumcised. Oh, wait, it's circumcised, too, is the other thing. Why are we... Yeah, we're just going... we're going straight for it. Just right out the box.
Blue dong.
Blue dong.
you didn't
Operation
think,
Blue Dong.
Really, I thought it was, wow, there's his giant blue penis.
Well, people were saying so much about it, I was expecting it to be all up in my grill.
Last night, went outside, that was like the whole thing where was people talking about the schlong... In the movie.
As they were walking out,
that was it. Like
really?
They were in a group outside, you know, so smoking his... cigarettes, talking about oh, there was a penis in the movie. All the you know, big giant penis.
So about his schlong.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is I was talking to Danny about it, Senlock, on our forum. He was saying that his favorite thing about it is the fact that it was somebody's job to animate a giant blue schlong the entire movie. That was his job. His job was to make sure that the giant blue schlong swayed properly when he walked.
I think his nuts aren't moving right.
And I think that's hilarious to think that.
Yeah, well, just to think about that. I think he's on it. Too, like, there was somebody, he was on the, he's on the whole thing, he's on top of it. Yeah. Right, but not only was it someone's job to animate it, it was someone's job to check to make sure it was animated correctly. And call him on.
I wonder if they use Crudup's penis. Like, all right, we need to see your junk.
We should just
to see how we're going to animate this. That, right? I mean, he's been
naked. He's been right out of the box. He's been everywhere.
I mean, he's been naked like in movies before. Do they take like old stills, or do he have to repose?
I got
to
say, I don't even.
Oh, he's like completely animated. Like, he's not cut like that either.
I don't even know who Billy Crudup is.
He's a good actor that appears in movies that normally people don't see.
Sean. I say the only actor in that movie that I knew was the midget from Seinfeld.
Lenny?
I don't know his name.
I can't remember his name. The little person.
The dwarf. Midgets. From Seinfeld. Why is midget a bad word? It doesn't make sense to me. Midgets. Whatever. That's beside the point. Hey, before we get off the penis. did you notice in the comedian's apartment, next to his TV, there is a giant black dildo?
No.
No, but I did notice a copy of Hustler.
Yes.
I wonder if Hustler gave some product placement money.
I saw the movie twice, and I did not see
it. You've seen it twice now? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, next to his TV, there's a giant black dildo. Sean pointed it out to
you. Oh, there you go.
Well, she's, if anybody's going to notice a giant black dildo.
She's on top of that. On top of that.
But, sometimes just beside it.
But it's in there. She's like, was that a penis? Next? And it every time they would like go near her TV, she's like, wait, look. And then, there was there, a giant black dildo.
I did not see that.
Right out of the gate, man, giant black dildo.
Right, there you go.
Is there a better way to start a movie?
I will have
to
say.
The movies that I normally watch always start
watching
that way.
That first part and then going into the title sequence, which I thought was phenomenally awesome. Mm-hmm. The whole like still shot. You're inside this picture and we're zooming around it. It's slow motion kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
What'd you think of the
Bob Dylan? Let's start off. Let's lay a little bit of background before we get into it. Because J. Chris Campbell is with us today. He's the third voice you hear.
J. Chris Campbell! And
he has never read Watchmen.
Never read Watchmen, yep. I'm coming out and telling everybody I've never read it.
It's raining!
And I've had a copy of it for probably as long as it's been collected. And I have single issues that I got around the same time when it came out.
So you don't have
all the single issues.
Oh, okay. I was like,
I probably have like, 1, 2, and 3 that I was going to read, but it just never interested you enough. It looked boring to me. It really did. And I knew from what people were saying about it at the time that it was pretty dark and just, straight up serious. And, I didn't want to, because I was at the time reading humor stuff, and I was into Turtles Turtle stuff, not the Archie stuff, but and the Tick and all that kind of thing, those silly.
Yeah,
I didn't want to sit down and read some nuclear holocaust superhero.
And it's comic. not that you're a creator that's a snob either. You read mainstream.
Yeah, I stuff. Read. I love. Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It might be that. No, it wasn't DC because I knew it was a standalone thing, and I read The Dark Knight when it was out, and there's a gnat flying around in here. The reason why I read The Dark Knight is because it looked funky and it looked kind of funny, and the Joker was in it, and so there was humor there for me to go to.
Yeah, not a whole lot of laughs in Watchmen.
No, not a whole lot.
No. Now, having seen the movie twice already.
Yep, twice in one day.
Does it make you want to go read it now?
Your life, pretty much.
It was worth it. It was a great movie. I thought it was really well done. The first time I watched it, I had an issue with the ultra-violent, stuff, just the violence, especially coming out of The Spirit. That was my main problem with The Spirit. I thought if they edited all that crap out of that, it would have been an awesome kids movie. I mean, it would have been fun. Really? Yeah.
That and probably just some language, too.
Yeah. because it looked great.
It's in Samuel L. Jackson's contract that he has to say motherfucker 18 times in every movie.
Oh, Watchmen made $25 million yesterday. I just got a text. But anyway, so with this, so I was going through it, and they're doing, you know, the arm snapping, and you see the bones bump out of the what was the first really violent thing they did? Oh, the fight scene in the beginning.
Yeah, the fight scene.
Which really wasn't gory or anything.
Yeah,
it was way extended. It was obviously extended for the movie, because in the book, the fight scene is not nearly that long.
What happens
long.
In the book? It just goes boom.
Having not, you were talking about having seen it twice in one day. I went and saw it Wednesday night, and I had already bought a ticket to see it at the midnight showing Thursday, and decided that I'd rather sleep, having already seen it. I didn't go. I had the ticket already.
You threw the money out the window.
Well, I'm going to try to trade it in. But as the closer it got to 12 o'clock, like, and I'll go out on record now saying that I did enjoy Watchmen. If you go to our forum, you'll know that I was kind of positive.
The closer your own personal doom day clock got to midnight.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it's like, I was like, man, okay, I liked it. And then after I got out of the movie, I was like, you know what? I'm going to flip through the book. I'm going to go buy Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. Plug! And flip through the book. and then go see it again the next night or that night. And I flipped through the book and I was like, yep, everything I ever thought I remembered, I remember. So my opinion of the movie that I had is probably pretty accurate, and I don't feel a need to go see it again right now. And I was like, well, maybe I will go. Well, maybe I won't. Well, maybe I will go. And like 10 o'clock rolled around and I'm like, all right, I'm going to call and see if I can find somebody that wants this ticket. And then I called and I couldn't find anybody that was willing to go to a midnight showing. That being that it's a 2-hour and 40-minute movie.
Was it that long?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that.
See, to me,
my cheeks both felt like it was that long.
Really?
Like, I wasn't, it's one of those things where you don't necessarily, it's like the Dark Knight.
I was engaged the entire movie.
Like,
at
the Dark Knight, I didn't want the movie to end, but my ass did.
Right.
Yeah.
And, the closer, like 11 o'clock, I was just like, you know what? I got to be at a job site tomorrow morning.
So you're not going.
And that would give me less, probably about 4.5, maybe 4 hours of sleep. I was not going to, worth it.
Me and the wife snuck out of work, which is, rare. I'm surprised we didn't get caught. and went and saw it at 12:30.
Yeah.
And my friends were going to go see it later that night. And then the one guy who was putting it together for all my friends to go see, kind of organizing it, he got sick and ended up not going. So that kind of fell apart. And I wanted one of my friends to definitely go see it, so I called him up and said, hey, you want to go see the 9 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, what? That's boring. So, we were talking about going to the movie, and I was like, hey, there's a movie called The Watchmen out. And he was like, really? I'm like, yeah. He's like, so you're going to go see it? And I'm like, yeah, you want to go see it? So we talked about going to see it.
And then he said, can I have Twizzlers? Right. And I said, no, I just kind of want
like,
popcorn.
I'm going to have to get a drink. I'm going to get a drink. You want to go get the seats? And I was like, look, you go get a drink. I'll get the seats. I'll have the seat waiting on you so that no one will come and get it.
If you
while
give me
you're
some
gone.
Reese's Pieces.
But I need some Red Vines and Dr. Pepper. And then he was like, dude, they don't even sell Red Vines here. Where do you think you're in New York? Anyway, we got in this whole thing about living in New York and driving and parking and how people's bumpers are messed up in New York. And like they use their bumpers to park, So that's
Rob
my story
Alden
about
wouldn't
the
have it any other way.
That's my Watchmen story.
Right. Movie? What movie?
Right.
So you went and saw it a second time.
So anyway, original issue with the movie was like, going through it, I was like, oh, they're doing this violent stuff. And I have not, I don't know anything about the story itself, which is shocking. I do know the one thing where Rorschach is like in jail, and that one line where is that in the book?
They're not, you don't understand. Yeah. You're not in here with me. I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me.
Yeah, yes, that's straight
from that is the one thing from the book that I have nothing else
so
from this
hardcore.
Book has seeped, has seeped out that I got ran across. So, but anyway, so watching that and the violence and everything was like, oh God, they're doing this again. It's going to just be a violent movie.
Yeah.
And then you get the whole killer ending and the way that was set up. And coming out of that, I was looking back and saying, well, if they didn't like set it up as this, you know, everybody's evil, horrible, there's, you know, bad, and look, this guy killed this little girl and he's getting axed in the head, and you know, at the end of it, you wouldn't even be fooled in the least bit, I don't think, that he was doing a bad thing to do the right thing.
Right.
You know, you would just think, I don't know, it made you think he was more, you made me think he was really evil when I got to the end.
I think
if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I've said before when talking about just the book, and I think it rings true with most of the characters in the movie. The thing I come away from the book with is that none of those people are a decent person except Manhattan, who is only decent because he's so removed.
Right.
He's not making any emotional decisions. He's only making logical choices, basically.
So,
but in the movie, the only way I feel that changed is they don't really make the second Silk Spectre or Night Owl, they don't give them the same sort of flaws that the book does. Mm-hmm. So both of them kind of come across as the only good people in the whole movie to a certain extent. I mean, they still make the choice to do the cover up at the end, but in the book, there are more times when they're shown as being very weak.
Okay.
And they don't show that the same, they don't have the same misgivings about them as a person in the movie that you do in the book.
And also, like, you know, to kind of go off that, in the book, like the whole yes, they made a whole, they went along with in the end and everything got blowed up, or in not in the book up necessarily, but the after scene where with the mom and, hey, I know who my dad is and all that stuff, in the book is way more flat. It's not lovey-dovey. It's not like, oh, I forgive you, I understand.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's, I know. Hey, I know who it is, and, you know, I'm humping this guy.
And they're also and it's also different circumstances because of because of what happened in the movie and because of what happened in the book, because the ending is different.
Yeah.
There's a different set of circumstances of why they're talking to her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But let's, you touched on the violence.
Is that in the book? I mean, is there bones scene popping? Oh, okay. There's some blood and
there is some violence in the book, but there's not a lot of action in the book. So I understand that, like, from the, you know, I imagine the conversation with Warner Brothers and Snyder went basically, this is a superhero movie, whether you like it or not, and you need to have so many action beats. Right, so like the killing of the comedian in the book is just a few panels of a flashback scene, basically.
But it's a few panels.
So they flesh it out more in the, and I don't have a problem with it, but they flesh it out more in the movie because that gives them an action scene.
And not only does it give them action scene, but really, I mean, when the fight scene, like you're saying with the comedian, and some of the other scenes, it's like in a book you can say, oh, they're fighting. Oh, look, here's another scene from the fight. Oh, they're still fighting. Oh, things are getting crazy. Oh, the fight's over. He's out the window. You can't do that in a movie. You have to sequentially fill in those gaps. You can't just flash fights pictures. I mean, if you're doing that, then, I mean, you might as well just read a book.
Well, I guess,
I mean, you have to stream them together.
Like, the only difference from my personal standpoint is when I read the book, or anytime I've read the book, I didn't look at it as if it was a fight. I looked at it as...
Really? See, I did.
See, I looked at it as he got his ass kicked and killed. And the fight scene in the movie, yeah, he still got his ass kicked and obviously got killed, but he put up more of a fight, I guess.
I flipped through the book, but I haven't read the book in about 2 years. But what I remembered was it showed a bunch of things. It showed, like, how badass the comedian is. And then it showed him kind of holding his own, but losing in the end because this guy was a little bit more badass and caught him off guard.
Well, I don't think the book gives it that amount of time.
I don't think it does either. It doesn't give it that amount of time, but it still hits all those beats. And what I'm saying is, with the pictures in the book, you can still hit those beats. You can't do that in a movie. You can't hit those. You can't tell that whole story with just like a tiny snippet of fight.
Well, and to follow up with that, as we go to the next fight scene that's expanded upon, is the one in the alleyway with Spectre and Owl, and they get jumped by the gang.
Yeah.
In the book, again, that's much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, they really stretch it out. In the movie, they really stretch it out. Again, I don't have a problem with them stretching it out, but like the guy's bones being shattered at the camera and stuff like that. I mean, as if you ask me straight up, that was unnecessary.
That one I do see as an action beat.
I don't see the, and I don't have a problem with them stretching that fight out because again, you need the action sequence. But but the way the violence was used, it was unnecessary.
The one thing that I thought was weird at that point, which might go back to speak to the Alan Spector, was because that was so violent with those two people. Like at that, you didn't see anything with them. I don't think any flashbacks or anything with them in action or anything.
Not from the earlier.
So you got how they dealt with people right there. And it was not, I mean, this is people who are coming to rob somebody.
Yeah. Right.
And they basically killed
most of them. Yeah. In the book, like in the book, all you basically get is, you know, they're coming to mug them. They, you know, team up and, you know, beat them down Batman and Batgirl style or whatever. And that's the end of it. In the book, they kill several of them. That's obvious. She breaks a guy's neck.
Yeah.
Another guy takes several bullets.
Yeah.
You know,
so that might be.
They killed those guys.
Now, but having the, you know, the arms pop right in the.
Yeah, that's unnecessary.
There is actually a flashback scene with Night Owl and Comedian. There is one from the earlier years.
Right.
But they're the end of the earlier years.
But they're basically just talking.
Yeah. Well, he's the
comedian.
Killing people.
The comedian's not talking.
Well, that's what
comedian's shooting people with a shotgun.
What I didn't realize too was that there wasn't. They don't have superpowers.
Yeah, the only one that has powers is
Manhattan. They're just badass.
I didn't realize that, and my wife, who didn't know anything about the book, was like, "They don't have superpowers." Mm-hmm. And so, at the second viewing, I watched where the owls are having their drink, and he says when they're coming into the scene and panning down over the pictures and stuff, he talks about how like a bunch of cops just decided, hey, you know, we're going to fight these guys, and that the bad guys were the ones that actually started wearing masks first, and that these guys who were like out of work cops or something or another started dressing up to fight these other dressed up bad guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was the one place where they actually said it. The rest of the movie, you don't really know that. I mean, other than they're just badass, kick-ass fighters.
Yeah.
But none of them have superpowers.
Well, while we have you here, Chris.
Yes.
Having not read the book, one of the things that I was wondering when I saw the movie, having read the book, is are people who have not read the book going to get a lot of this? Because there was a lot of time flash-forwards that I thought maybe if you didn't already have the background of those characters, you might not really be like, what the hell was that I just saw? But, I mean, how did that go for you?
I thought it was all good. If you watch it, and I watched it the second time with that kind of idea in mind, their music choices are from period pieces. And so they flashbacks.
But oddly enough, a lot of them are not in the periods that the movie is in.
Well, they do the flashbacks, and they'll do older music.
Right.
So it just kind of
start out with the Bob Dylan song going through the early years and stuff. Yeah.
But I mean, like when they did a flashback with the comedian and the owl and the riot thing, they're playing
Hendrix.
They're playing. Yeah.
Playing Watchtower.
Mm-hmm. Is that in that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, I can't remember the song, but I knew, I mean, it set it in time.
Yeah.
But again, I'm used to flashbacks and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if someone like, you know, whoever walks in, they're going to be thrown off by those flashbacks.
Well, I mean,
the most flashbacks were done with them standing at the graves with the heads down. Yeah, so they showed the person and then did a flashback. And the comedian's alive, so you're not, like, well, he's alive. He was just in the ground. What the hell's going on?
Well, it's like with a lot of the characters who had died before the movie actually starts. I mean, it's like that in the book too. Those characters are already gone and passed, but they get covered a tiny bit more, I guess, in the flashbacks. But I mean, do you even notice any of that, or is that just like all throwaway stuff? Or
none of that confused me at all.
I mean, really, even like you get a little bit of information from the Night Owl and Night Owl conversation, but he means a little bit more later on because he ends up being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't it. I don't know if that's in the movie. I think that's going to be in the director's cut.
Yeah.
Because I went and looked at the soundtrack and there's a track on the score. Cause They have a score soundtrack and then they have a soundtrack for the songs. Right. I wanted to see if the songs, how many of them were remakes and how many of them were the actual music. Speaking but when you music. Look at the score, there's a track that says Who Killed Hollis Mason?
Oh, yeah.
Who's the original Night Owl, and he doesn't die in the movie, so I'm guessing that's part of Snyder's, the director's cut that he's threatening people with. It's going to be like 8 hours.
You want to talk music?
I need to talk music because, I mean, it was cool. I thought the Bob Dylan opening sequence, somebody who might love Bob Dylan might have been thrown off by that, but I thought it was perfect. It felt good and everything.
One of the things about that sequence, as I cut you off.
Yeah, go ahead.
That as I stop your flu.
Right. He's holding his hands in front of my face making me stop.
Sean wasn't really happy with the Bob Dylan usage and things like that.
Yeah.
And she said, my kind of thing was, with that sequence, the Bob Dylan song kind of kicks in, that whole sequence, I almost removed that from the movie and kind of like just...
Yeah.
Watched it as itself.
Yeah.
And I did, and then when it was over, I'm back in the movie. Right, yeah. I kind of like separated that almost.
It was like I don't know. It was
I thought yeah. They made some really weird musical choices.
Oh, they did definitely make some Hallelujah.
That right there. Hallelujah. Let me tell you. That song should never even existed. And on top of the fact, the people that think that song is the song to use for those scenes have serious problems with their brain. Okay? Because that sex scene was an R-rated sex scene. I mean, you can rent movies that are like...
I've seen stuff on Cinemax that wasn't that graphic.
Yeah, totally.
I heard Daniel called it the late night Cinemax scene.
It totally was.
That was, you know, when we talk about violence, some of the violence being out of place. Other people have said it, V in particular on the forums and on Twitter and whatnot is complaining about it. And I'll agree, that was unnecessary.
I'm telling you, look. Yeah.
What's unnecessary is the freaking song they used. Yeah.
Well, I think the whole
I'm sitting
thing,
there going, right? Are you trying to arouse me or make me laugh through this thing?
Yes.
Sean laughed a lot, yeah.
Because you're just going to laugh through the whole thing. I mean, it's definitely uncomfortable if you're there and like, I'm watching this get down and dirty sex scene here with my buddy.
I didn't find it.
He's right there. Our arms are touching right now. But
and I reach for the popcorn. And
that song is horrible and should not even exist.
Hopefully
and
the director's cut will have it different.
I don't know why who sat through that and was like, you made a good choice with that song because I wanted to get down. It made me want to get down. You know, I was in the moment
down.
There in that owl ship with that Hallelujah.
Actually, I was wrong. Watchtower is not what plays.
I didn't think so.
It's I'm Your Boogeyman by KC and the Sunshine Band. I think Watchtower is playing when they're in Nam.
Yes. Yes.
I knew it was
just
in one of those.
I have to say one more time, that sex scene song, ridiculous.
Well, as
put your fingers in your ears.
I was going to say,
here comes Adams. As someone who saved people from a burning building before.
No, that's not what I was going to say. Like, we're talking about the, we're jumping, like, we'll let the songs guide us through our topic of discussion here. But that being aside, the fact that it was a heat of the moment, passionate sex scene. Again, let's ignore the song. Let's just ignore the song.
Can't.
Okay. So, heat of the moment. It's a heat of the moment, passionate sex scene after they just saved all these people from like this flaming fire thing, and he couldn't get it up earlier,
right,
and now he can because he's excited.
I thought the second time I watched it, it looked like he prematurely ejaculated. I'm serious, because he said, I need a few minutes.
I thought it was that he wasn't functioning.
I think it was the first viewing.
I mean, that kind of stuff has never happened to me, so I don't know from personal experience.
Anyway, you were saying.
Okay, but, you know, that was the heat of the moment sex scene.
I'm not.
I mean, okay, that's beside the point. The point is, other people are saying it's too long. Okay, let me point this out.
I get that a lot.
Let me point this out. In the book, not only do they have that sex scene, but after the world gets destroyed, there is another sex scene that they didn't put in the movie, so eat shit and die.
the argument I have with it is not that they would have gotten down like that. If I saw her in that outfit, I'd want to get down like that every time. My problem is they didn't need to show it that way.
Here's my thing.
It doesn't need to be a Cinemax moment.
If that, I'm fine. It's the Watchmen.
I've seen
doing
Vivid Video that's less hardcore than
they're
that.
They're making me watch guys get axed in the head and, you know, bones break. I need a little payoff here in the middle of the movie. I thank them for that. But they ruin it for me.
That's a nice
cast. Imagine that whole scene with no music.
Yeah, a lot
and
of...
you were just like listening... sound I've, of the ship and everything and just yeah. silence and it would have been like
a lot of people are saying
well that's the Cinemax way. Cinemax doesn't use the actors' voices, they use the crappy porn music.
Cinemax uses the same songs over and over again. That's beside the point.
I love you. I would rather that song.
Oh yeah, baby.
Anyway. I totally forget. Okay, what I was gonna say. I was gonna say that a lot of people were saying that the music in that movie had no business even being in the movie. Like, the movie could have just been perfectly fine with regular, just background music.
They just
kind
made some crazy choices.
Yeah. Right here. Well, the problem is the music, it jumps out at you. Like, every music piece that plays is like, I'm a music piece! Yeah. You know? And it's like...
Ooh, yeah!
And it's like, it's not there to accompany, it's there to be there. Right.
Well,
some of the
score is very accompanying. Some of the score is very good.
Yes.
But the, you know, again, it's one of those things where...
It totally looks like somebody said, what year did this happen? 1972. What's the number one song? Boogeyman. All right, that's what we need for this set. You know, it's like... What's the biggest song from that year?
And it's funny.
We have to use that for the piece.
The Dark Knight just had a soundtrack.
Yes.
The wife just left?
She just left me.
My wife
left.
I think the Dark Knight did it a little bit better that way, is that it didn't have any songs. Mm-hmm. It just had the score. And Watchmen might have been more suited towards just
maybe if they just had Prince do the soundtrack. I don't know.
Did he blow
it? I don't know why. I don't know why. The weird thing, when watching it, you get this, like, some of it you get this 70s Superman feel. Did you feel that? Like, I'm watching Superman?
No.
You didn't get that? No. Some of the scenes or something felt like, I think it was that, just the regular dramatic scenes were, like, so dramatic. Like, just the talking, like, oh, the world's going to blow up and blah, 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 kind of. But anyway, so you get that. And then those songs being like that. Felt like you were watching Forrest Gump, especially when they shake the hand in Miracle shaking JFK's hand.
I think it's like you said, though, is that I think to a certain extent it was, what year is this in?
Yeah.
Let's play something to make people realize that like, this is 1985 or whatever.
You're going to have to hold 95% of the population's hand through this movie. What's the best way to do it?
Other than
Flash 1977 up on the screen.
And this movie very much, and a lot of places in this movie... feels like it's trying to hold my hand.
The Forrest Gump point was a point
and
that
I'm not
I made
comfortable
once.
With that.
Well,
I'm not either.
I don't know it that well. I don't know that I want to hold hands. That's kind of a commitment.
There's a couple of hold. Like, I guess we can move on to the holding hands discussion. Theory.
Well, I tell you something.
Great, I'm going to get sued by Michael Jackson or whoever owns that song.
I think unfortunately Jackson still owns it.
No, I think the only thing to me that really that the biggest holding of the hand that stood out to me was the whole scene where they do like the whole flash with on Mars where Silk Spectre realized they do the whole your dad is the comedian's right. thing and they go through this whole thing to show that oh my god her dad was the comedian and then as soon as it's over Dr. Manhattan goes that's right. The comedian was your father. It's like, really? Come on, man. Like, why couldn't we have just left it with, like, this whole, like, oh, was that?
Does he do that in the book?
In the book.
It gives it more, because there's more time.
The comedian says it in the book. In the book, during the flashes, you know, like, there's that scene where he's like, can a guy hang out or talk to his friend's
dog?
And that happens earlier, I think. But then later during that scene, he goes, can a guy talk to his daughter? Or something like that.
I could be wrong, but I don't think it's the same flashbacks.
It might be. That's what,
I think you get multiple comedian flashbacks.
I think it's different flashbacks. But the comedian does say during that flashback, instead of Dr. Manhattan saying the comedian's your father, it's in the flashback, comedian says, can a guy talk to his daughter or something like that.
You know what? I'm glad you brought up that scene because that was the one part in the movie I was like, okay, they're going to reveal something. she killed the comedian because of something. Because that would have made you just completely lose your crap. You know, oh, I killed my own dad. You know? I was waiting for that. I was like, that's not what happened. What the heck happened? What's this movie? You know, I thought that she, you know, saw what he did to his her mother and...
Well, here's something to ask, because a lot of people...
Are you going to ask my question?
Some people have complained that I've read is that there isn't a mystery in this murder mystery. The thing that I always like to ask people when they see movies that's supposed to have some sort of gotcha moment, right, like Usual Suspects, is when did you figure out what was going on? Did you figure it out when they reveal it, or did you know at some point that, oh, this is what's going on?
Guys are so sane.
I didn't know what was going on. I was waiting for them to find the whodunit.
So you didn't, until they revealed it, you didn't know it was Ozzy.
There was not really a reveal of the whodunit, because the whole thing, I mean, they built this thing around a whodunit, and it wasn't. Because the reason they killed him was ridiculous. It's like, who's breaking, and we had to take him out, kind of thing. And it was not, it didn't feel right. I mean, him getting killed by her for that was like, wait a second, you know, like as a side, this whole thing's built around this, but it's not really a big deal.
Yeah.
Felt more right.
The feeling that I got from it, and again, with the book, what you got to understand with the book is almost like 50 little miniature stories that each are their own importance that have nothing to do with some of these other things, and they all intertwine eventually, and it all like comes to the end. You're like, oh, they all were related, and it's kind of the same thing. Like the whole the comedian dying, like Rorschach is trying to figure out who this cape killer is, who killed the comedian, and it's like that's not really what the big story is, and that's kind of the thing. It's one of those. That's one of those mini stories in The Watchmen that you find out. All twine
because well, as you read The Watchmen, clues to it though.
Yeah,
you know, there's no clues to the whodunit.
That's how it is in The Watchmen. I think in the book too.
Is that the way the book is? Because that's what I was doing. I was sitting
until
there
you get
waiting
there
for the clues.
Here you go.
Let
me be. Let me be. All cool for a minute. The Watchmen is the same thing as same thing as Rorschach sitting with the doctor doing the Rorschach test.
Yes,
Watchmen is that.
Yeah,
is you. Different people are going to see different things because of how you take the reactions of other people.
Right.
And I know a lot of people, myself included, when they read it for the first time, suspect Vedit or Ozymandias or however you say his names.
Yeah.
Suspect him because of his douchiness.
Yeah.
Early on, because you're subjected for that. And then some people are searching the whole time. And then when it's revealed that that's who they suspect, it's a big moment.
Right.
So I think people see different things into it. And one of the things I'll say about some of this stuff is that all three of us liked it. If you haven't gotten, if you haven't gotten that at this point, we're bringing up some of this stuff because, you know, something Adam and I talked about is some of the things people were complaining about are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, this was a 12 issue miniseries and it was even at 3 hours, there's not time for everything. So some of the stuff that you're going to say was missing, in particular something that Adam's probably getting ready to jump on, is, you know, there's not time to build the same sort of drive to the reveal in a 3-hour movie that there is in a 12 issue series. And something that you brought up is, like you said, you don't feel like there was the kind of payoff that you were looking for. Yeah. In the book, I think there really is. I think it builds to it. But again, that's a year's worth of monthly comics.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, 2.5 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's a good summation of this whole thing, especially since I got to cruise out of here.
Well, that's cool. We're going to move on to our some forum posts and to some voicemails, man.
I do want to say one final thing, though.
Yeah.
And after seeing this, I'm sick and tired of this ultra-violent superhero thing in the movies, and that was one of the things coming out of there. I wanted to be done with that. I'm like, okay, they've done The Watchmen. They've done The Dark Knight. This can be over now. You know, they can do something else.
Have you seen?
And you're wrong. Yeah, it's only going to get more.
Have you seen Underdog?
Yes.
See, I love that movie.
It's a good
movie. Even supposedly the animated, like the Wonder Woman animated, is supposed to be really violent for an animated Warner Brothers movie.
I don't know. It's just like the one cool thing with this though is the end of the movie. The solution to the problem of nuclear war was like, wow, they've used the superheroes to do this thing that you've never read about before. Yeah. That was cool.
I'll
seeing people pop, getting arms cut off and, you know, throwing hot oil on people and all that stuff, you know, I don't want to see that anymore.
I was gonna get into the argument of the
outside. This is not going to be the year of comic book movies for you, my friend.
I was going to get into the argument of the outside source, but yeah, Surrogate.
Yeah, it comes at the end of the year. Thank you so much for having me talk with you guys.
One other question to ask you is,
sorry that I'm having to leave. Just walk right out the door.
Having seen this movie twice already.
Yes.
Are you going to go read it now?
I most likely will not read it. I have a lot of other stuff
Alan
to
Moore
read.
Hates you for that.
And I have seen the movie.
Do you think you'll watch the movie again at some point?
I probably will. I might see it again in theater.
Wow.
Yeah, I could see it possibly tomorrow, but I doubt it. Because I have another friend of mine who wanted to see it, and he's pissed at me for not seeing it with
other people.
Yeah, but I couldn't arrange everything, you know? Anywho, I should have read it when it came out.
Or when Rob Albin gave you a copy and begged you to.
And he called me last week and was like, you got a week to read this. You need to read it. The other thing about the movie, too, we're talking about Rob Ullman here. He was like, if this is all slow motion music, blah, blah, blah thing, I'm going to be sick. You know, and I was watching that thing going, Rob's going to hate this movie.
is it one of the favorite things that he's read?
He loves it. Yeah.
We should have called Rob.
Yeah. But you still can. Why not? Go back and call him. He'll talk to you.
You have anything to plug before you leave?
Chris. I do.
I mean, besides Adam's balloon night.
We have Fluke coming up.
Which we will be rocking.
April 4th.
Devin and I will be hammered.
I will be at Fluke in Athens, Georgia. You can go to flukeathens.com.
Athens, Georgia, home of the hot college girl.
Yeah. And also...
And Fluke, home of the hot home of the hot comic girl.
I'm going to be at...
that knows a redheaded chick with big... You
my
know,
house
tattoos.
Later tonight. you can drop by there and check me out. But Free Comic Book Day, which is on May 2nd, I'll be at Richard's Comics and Collectibles.
Rocking it out.
With potentially a Batmobile there as well.
Which will be sweet.
Which Batmobile?
But
some guy made his own Batmobile.
What?
All right, we're going to stop by and take
he
pictures
also has a,
of Batmobile.
He also has a full costume.
You aren't coming to Richard's?
No, I figured we'd do this.
Adam's kind of dating somebody at another comic book store.
Well, I told her that we were going to do the same thing we did last year. Leave Richard's around 12 or whatever.
Well, there's a Batmobile there. I need to get a picture of me in a Batmobile.
I'm going to be at Richard's for Free Comic Book Day drawing robots. But
not robots in disguise.
For everyone who can't get to a comic book shop, can download a free comic from wideawakepress.com. We're doing another free comic download like Piltdown from last year.
You giving a title yet?
This year's called Ancient, and we're moving forward in time, so it's another time period. And there's some really great people in it, some new people you'd never see, and some old, you know, if you're digging the Wappies, they're in there, most of them. So,
and the Fluke Anthology's got a lot of great people.
The Fluke Anthology, Brad McGinty and I are putting that together. We're actually wrapping it up here.
Fluke Anthology was so packed, there was no room in it for me.
There wasn't. And it filled quickly.
You know it's good if there's no room for me.
I did, however, recently talk to Dwayne Ballinger. That's what she said. It's really bad that he didn't have anything at the Fluke Anthology because he's too fucking lazy to do anything.
Because he's Dwayne.
Also, I have...
Tease him with meatloaf.
I have some pages in Awesomer Anthology. And
it's Indie Spinnerack.
Indie Spinnerack. Top Shelf's putting it out.
Top Shelf.
And I'm going to have some pages in the Dollar Bin's got a book. You guys heard of that podcast? It's a pretty good podcast.
I heard those guys suck.
Well, I've never actually listened to that episode. I hear the girls like them or something. At least two girls. One. Maybe two.
One and a half.
Regardless, those guys are putting together.
No,
they're putting together a tight little book. I don't know if you got the last one. It was a nice book, but this one's supposed to be.
I tell you what was awesome about the last one is that back cover was sweet.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was sweet.
It was a sweet, sweet back cover.
End part one. Be on the lookout for part two with responses to your reviews later this week.